I'm Martin Palmer, and I'm Secretary General of the Alliance of Religions and Conservation.
How did the idea of this alliance come about?
Well, I wrote a book back in 1983 for schools in Britain, which was the first ever book that explored the relationship between religion and how we view the planet, how we view creation, nature. And it looked at eight different belief systems, from Christianity through to Chinese religion, from the Yanomamo through to humanists, and looked at the fact that depending on what story we tell of why it's all here, that shapes what we then think we could or should or should not do with it, a degree of protection. Prince Philip read the book, and he was at that time the international president of WWF International, Worldwide Fund for Nature. And he it was who at a big meeting of WWF International said, look, if the environmental crisis was a crisis of knowledge, be over. We know the problems. We know what's going wrong. The trouble is we're not touching people. We're not actually changing lives. We're not touching their hearts and their minds. And he said there are only two things that have ever done that positively, religion and the arts, and very often they're synonymous. So it was his suggestion that we should come in 1986 to Assisi, bring or invite religious leaders from five faiths to join us to explore if this was at all possible. Was this an issue they cared about? Was this something they could do? And it was so successful. WWF got the largest media coverage it's ever had for any event anywhere. That out of that grew an informal network, working with the faiths, helping them to explore their teachings, discover their own traditions, festivals, old habits, old ways of doing things which were sustainable, but which had been sort of slightly lost sight of in the modern era. And then in 1995, Prince Philip and I founded the Alliance of Religions and Conservation. Deliberately as a secular body, funding comes from secular sources. People often say, you know, we've never heard of you. We go, good. Because the aim really is that we help the faiths to do what they probably would have got round to doing, but maybe in a few decades' time. That is, to launch environmental projects based on what they own, what they believe, what they invest in, what they do, and to bring them in partnership with relevant conservation and scientific bodies so they don't have to reinvent ecology, but they do actually make it their own.
It is a very unlikely partnership, isn't it? I mean, some would say that the environmental movement is the most secular, aggressively secular body, and that perhaps it is out to exploit religious communities in some way. Do you ever get that sense?
Oh, all the time. Because basically, most secular groups, when they come to us, they say, now, what we would really like is our message to be preached in the mosque on the Friday, the synagogue on a Saturday, and the church on the Sunday. And here's the message, and we think it'll be very useful if they would go and preach this now. And we go, well, sorry, that's not how it works. No, I mean, the secular world views religion as essentially an ethical code which is useful when it agrees with them. Our response is therefore to take any group, the World Bank, for example, UNDP, many of the conservation bodies, on a journey of their own, which is to realize that they themselves are not value-free. They are deeply culturally shaped, often, ironically, by the Judeo-Christian tradition, which they most vehemently reject. But they're often the most apocalyptic end-of-the-world people you're ever likely to meet, far more so than the average sort of preacher on a high street. So part of it is actually helping the secular groups to realize that they transmit values themselves. They themselves are carriers of cultural values, which are often at conflict with what they think they're saying. And therefore, our role is to broker. These are worlds that have not spoken to each other for 200 years in many cases. There is deep suspicion on both sides. Our role is to break down those suspicions, but to make sure that any partnership is actually a partnership, not an exploitation, either by the secular or by the religious.
You've been talking about an increase in fundamentalism on both sides, the secular and the religious, and this is a cause of great concern.
It is, but I always take heart from a comment that a friend of mine made years ago, and he said, if you're at a swimming pool, where does most of the noise come from? And I said, the shallow end, he said, exactly. And I think that's what we've got to remember. The shallow end makes all this noise. That's because they're the most insecure. But I would say, and I've worked with every major religion, every major secular organization concerned with the environment for the last 25 years, I would say that 90% of people care because it's good and they're good people. Maximum 10% want to hammer you into the ground if you don't agree with them. We like to give some kind of voice to the 90%.
You're working, as you say, across the different church traditions, across the different faiths. Some would say it's an incredibly unlikely mix. It's a very confusing mix. You're actually papering over profound theological differences. How do you respond to that particular accusation?
Well, because we don't. We are not interested in some kind of superficial unity. When we did the first Assisi in 86, everybody expected we'd come out with one theological statement and one religious statement. We said, no, we've got five different traditions here. They're all completely different. They don't agree. That's why they have members that belong to them. No, what we do is we tend to work one by one with each of the faith traditions. Every so often, it's useful to bring them together so they can share experiences. But we don't claim they believe the same thing. We don't claim that they are all in agreement on everything. What we do say is, come proud of your own tradition, but humble enough to listen.
Do you think it can add value, though, to the ecumenical and interfaith movement, this work on the ecology, on the environment together?
Yes, because I think it's a bigger subject than just whether we're actually talking about the same God. And I think an awful lot of interfaith dialogue is monumentally dull, because it's religions talking about religions to other religions. What we always do is we always have a secular partner. So our main secular partner here is the UN, the Norwegian government. They set the question. The religions come in response to that and come with their responses. When religions talk to religions, often all it is platitudes. Here we're saying, there is a crisis. Here are the secular groups. Have you anything to contribute? Have you anything to say? And if you have, come and join us.
Finally, what do you see as the achievements of a conference of this kind?
Well, we're quite cunning. We already have at least 70% of the results ready before we come. And so we've launched this new Green Pilgrimage Network. We've launched a greening of the Hajj, which starts a few days after this event finishes. We've launched two new long-term plans, one in Mongolia, one in Egypt. So that's already there in the bag. We don't hold an event unless there's something new to announce. But what also comes out of this is the next round of major commitments that faiths will make. And to be honest, until they tell us what they want, we're not quite sure.
There are some very good ideas coming out of this. How do you monitor implementation of these very grand and very ambitious projects?
We don't. We have to trust the faiths. We are a tiny staff. And our role is not to monitor the religions. Our role is to ask the religions to be faith consistent. And by giving major media coverage, like yourself, we make it clear to the believers that their leaders have said this. They're very good at keeping them on the straight and narrow.